When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. Today I talked to Dr. David Ramey, all the way from California in the USA. He's a veterinary expert, and recently he's written an article on forelimb flexion tests. These are tests which are used in your vettings if you're looking to buy a horse. So Dr. David explains why he came up with the study and his findings. Plus, he gives us some advice if we're looking to buy our first horse. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Occasionally, you get a guest that just gets you so excited, you get butterflies. And today, we have that guest. His name is Dr. David Ramey. He's based in California, and his list of specialities and who he's worked with is so long. But just briefly, he's a practitioner with over 34 years' experience. He's published over 70 times in various scientific journals, and he's written over 13 books on horse health. And that is just the slight bit of what Dr. David Ramey has done. How are you, David?
Could not be better, thank you. How's things on your side of the pond?
Really good, thank you. Yeah, a bit wet, a bit miserable, typical England, but really good. Thank you so much for joining us, because I was doing some research the other day. I'm a bit of a horse geek, I will be totally honest with you. I'm not an expert. I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to horses. So I'm like a little sponge, I like to learn. And I came across your article recently on forelimb flexion tests. And it's, I think, a different way of thinking of things. So I was wondering if you could talk us through that article that you wrote and what made you come up with it in the first place.
Well, sure. And before we get started, after 34 years of working on horses, I have to confess to you that I share your horse geekiness. There's nothing about being around horses that has done anything to dissuade that geekiness. So, sure. Let's see. You asked what started this. Well, This actually started, and I know exactly when it started. In 1989, I was asked to fly to Atlanta, Georgia, to look at a show hunter. Now, in 1989, this horse was valued at $350,000, which is still a lot of money, but back then it was just an incomprehensible amount of money to pay for a show hunter. And so I got off the plane in Atlanta carrying all my old x-ray equipment to go see the horse, a beautiful chestnut gelding that incidentally later became a United States champion. And I came out with my stethoscope and all of my 6 years of expertise and walked up to the horse and proudly examined him. And this horse had a show record a mile long. It had won all over the eastern part of the United States. And I watched him trot up and down and watched him under saddle. And he just couldn't have been a nicer looking horse. And I felt his legs and there wasn't a bump on him. And so then I went to do a forelimb flexion test. And I don't recall if it was the right fore or the left foreleg, but I held his right foreleg inflection at the fetlock, hanging onto the hoof as we confidently do. And this horse trotted off like I had just driven a nail into his hoof.
Oh, no.
And so I was just shocked. And so I said, well, here's what we'll do. Let's repeat all these tests. And we trotted him and we lunged him and we watched him go over saddle. And the horse was perfect, flawless. And I went back and I did the flexion test again, and this horse went off like I just crippled him. I mean, he was so lame. And I figured, well, I will have the answer now. I'm going to get my x-ray machine out. And so I took x-ray after x-ray after x-ray, and I could not find anything wrong with this horse. So I completed the examination, and I get on the airplane. The clients asked me to call them. I don't know if you remember the old airplane phones that you could swipe a credit card through.
Yeah.
But I called my client, and they said, so, what do you think? And I went through all of the findings, and I said, he was fine, he's fine, he's fine. And I said, but there was this four-limb flexion test, and I'm telling you, he was so lame. And they said, okay. And I said, great. And they said, so what do you think? And I repeated my findings to them. And they said, no, we understand now that. But you said he was off to his flexion. Do you think he's going to be okay? Well, so there I am on an airplane over the United States. And my clients are basically asking me whether or not they should spend $350,000 on this horse. And as I said, he turned out to be a U.S. champion. And I said, you know, I think he's going to be okay. And, you know, nothing exploded. And then they bought the horse. He gets out to California 2 weeks later. And I run right out to the barn and I do a four-limb flexion test on him. And the horse was perfect.
Oh,
didn't
really?
Miss a thing. Yeah, he went on for, I think, 6 years. I said, won the United States champ, won shows all over the United States, and sadly died of colic. But it got me thinking, what the heck is going on here? So I started... I'm fortunate enough to live close to some major universities, and I went to the University of California at Los Angeles Medical School Library and started researching flexion tests and just found out this information that was all over the board. Like, they started researching flexion tests back in Sweden in the 1920s. And I found out all of these crazy things that we can talk about. But I decided, well, I'm going to do a study. I'm going to find out for myself. So I got 50 horses. And these were all horses in my practice, including some top level show jumpers and, you know, backyard horses, all sorts of different breeds. And I did flexion tests on them.
Because that's important, isn't it, to have a big variety? Because I just going back to your owner there that was asking you to test the horse. I mean, one, yes, if you're paying $350,000, you kind of want the all clear from your vet to say, yeah, he's amazing, let's get him. But even if you're spending £1,000 on your horse, I want that approval. I don't know whether that's okay or that's not okay. So I'm going to look at my vet to give me that all clear as in, yes, you should get him. He's brilliant.
Right. And as veterinarians, I mean, we tend to want to try to stay away from telling people whether or not they should buy a particular horse. But at the same time, you know, we have a lot of experience and our clients are expecting us to share that experience with them. And so they rely on us for information. So when it comes to a flexion test, which is a test that's easy to do, I mean, just about anybody can do it, the question is this test providing reliable information about it?
Can you talk us through the flexion test for people that are listening that maybe haven't seen it before? It's quite hard to describe on audio, I know.
Right. Well, now I want to just remind everybody that we're talking about flexion tests of the front legs. Now, there has been work on the hind legs, but the hind legs are a different thing. So just, you know, to be clear, we're talking about the front legs. And, you know, anybody that's worked around a horse has a way of picking up a front leg. And in so doing, you pick up the front leg and then you bend them at the fetlock joint, the metacarpophalangeal joint, if you want to use medical speak.
Hey,
yeah. I had to pay at the ankle, the fetlock. You want to try not to bend them at the knee too much, because the more you bend them up the leg, the more joints you bend and the more variables you put into the test. So you tend to want to keep the leg fairly low to the ground with a minimal amount of flexion in the knee. And then you put some force on the ankle or the fetlock and you hold them for a period of time. Now, I've already talked about two of the problems with the test. One is that you can bend other structures than just the ankle joint. And two is the amount of time is not standard. In other words, some people will do the test for 30 seconds and some people will do it for 3 minutes. So you have a degree of variability in this test that makes it a little suspect. But that's how you do it. You pick the leg up, you tend to keep the leg fairly straight, and you put the majority of the bend in the horse's fetlock joint or his ankle joint.
What are you hoping to see? What are you hoping that the flexion test is going to prove from doing this?
Well, the idea is that we're trying to put some stress on the leg. And so, I mean, you know, anybody can think about if they have a sore muscle or a mild twist of an ankle, you can walk around okay. But if somebody really dug their thumb into your sore muscle or stretched it or something and asked you to run right off, it would be sore for a little bit.
Yes.
And so the idea is that, well, maybe by putting a little stress on the leg, we can find something that is sort of lying under the waters, as it were, a problem that is developing that's maybe not causing a clinical lameness, but by stressing it, we can pick up something.
Mm.
That's the hope, anyway. The question is whether we actually do. And that's the point of my research study, was to say, well, what are we doing? Are we actually finding anything? So with 50 horses in my study, I had 100 legs, right? 100 front legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I held each of them and I picked 60 seconds as my time. That's a fairly common. And I did the flexion test two ways. One, I did what I consider kind of a normal flexion test. That is, I just held the leg up and then I trotted the horse off. And I recorded to see if it took any lame steps after that. And then I did what I considered a hard flexion test, a test with so much pressure on the leg. Many of the horses were trying to jump up in the air and trying to get away from the pressure. Mm-hmm. And I held them for a minute as hard as I could without getting hurt and then trotted the horses off. That's how I did the study.
Wow.
And the results were really fascinating.
What did you find from the first one, from the 60-second not too hard flexion test?
Now, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but as I recall, it was about 23% of the horses, so 23 out of 100 legs, would take at least a few lame steps off after the flexion test.
Mm.
So that's a lot. I mean, a quarter of the horses will take a lame step or two or three or several after having just a regular old flexion test done.
And then from then, how many of those had future problems and were actually lame?
Well, see, that gets into the later parts of the study. So I won't forget that question. But when I did the hard flexion test, I could make 96 out of 100 legs lame.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
There, and actually, two of the legs that didn't go lame were on the same horse. There was this little Arabian horse that was awful to be around. But I couldn't make him lame no matter what. But at any rate, so the question is, well, what went on to happen with these horses? Well, I did more work here. Of all of these fetlock joints that I examined, I radiographed. I took x-rays of all of them. And I followed them for 60 days after the flexion test in order to try to answer the question that you just asked.
Mm.
And what I found was that roughly 25% of the horses that I examined had some sort of an abnormality on their x-ray as well.
Oh, really?
However, there was absolutely no correlation between the horses that had an x-ray abnormality and the results of a flexion test.
So you're basically saying a horse that, it might have had an abnormality in another part of the leg that's nothing to do with the muscle that you've touched.
Well, I'm talking about an abnormality in the bones that are surrounding where I did the flexion test.
Oh, really?
Now, when I talk about abnormal, you have to remember that abnormal means different than what we consider regular. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem for the horse. And the veterinary literature and the veterinary community has a hard time deciding what things aren't normal on an x-ray, but also don't bother the horse.
Mm.
And so what I found based on this study is there are actually quite a lot of things that show up on an x-ray that we can look at and go, well, you don't see that on every horse. And you don't. But as long as you don't tell the horse about it, they seem to do just fine. Then what happened was I followed the horses out for 60 days. Now, of those 50 horses, in 60 days, seven of the horses had an episode of lameness.
Okay? Oh, okay.
Of those, five of them were related to the hoof somehow. So that's not anything that we could have predicted with a flexion test. Mm-hmm. And two of the seven had a problem in the back leg. So that's not something we're going to figure out. So what I did conclude is that if you follow horses that are being ridden a lot for 60 days, some percentage of them will go lame. But as anybody who owns horses, that's not a big surprise. If you're working a horse hard, you're going to find some little episode of lameness,
yes,
right?
Yeah, true.
And what was interesting, too, is that the horses that went lame were no more likely to have X-ray abnormalities than the horses that didn't go lame. So what I concluded, and what has been subsequently supported in studies, is that in a horse that is otherwise normal, now I'm not talking about, I want to be real clear, because you know, if you have a horse with arthritis and you bend its arthritic joint and you hold it and ask them to trot off, you can make them lame.
Yeah,
but those horses are usually limping. Those horses usually have an idea that there's a problem, and the flexion test can help you confirm that problem. But in a horse that isn't lame and is showing no signs of a problem, a flexion test is, number one, it's not very specific. In other words, it won't tell you if there's a problem in a particular area. And it's not very sensitive in that it won't tell you if a positive response means that a horse has a problem or is going to have a problem. Mm. So I have seen over the course of my career far too many horses that the owners had, they were trying to sell, that were absolutely fine, that didn't do well on a flexion test, were rejected for purchase because of their flexion test, and then went on and did great and continued to do great and not have problems. So my conclusion was, if flexion tests have any value at all, they don't have very much value, and you certainly should not base a purchase decision in a sound horse solely on a flexion test of the front leg.
Well, I feel like my brain's been frazzled. It's incredible. What you're basically saying is that we should be taking, we don't need the flexion tests. They have no point. They don't show us anything really, other than if you push something for long enough, it's going to hurt and make them lame for a few minutes.
Well, I think there is a good part of that. But again, there are horses that do have problems that flexion tests will make worse. You usually know about those horses, though. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you're examining the horse, you can go to a horse and say, you know, this joint feels stiff. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel good. And then you flex that horse and he's lame. And you take an X-ray of it and you go, oh, look, there's some arthritis in there. Okay. It can, in that instance, it can help build a case that there is a problem in a certain area.
Yes.
But in and of itself, no, it doesn't exist in a vacuum.
So should it be then a secondary point of research from the horse, really, to see what's wrong with it, almost like an investigative thing that they do? Because when I'm thinking of our stage vettings, when we're looking to buy a horse, you have a 2-stage and you have a 5-stage. Is that the same in America?
It is not the same in America.
What do you have over there?
Well, you know, here, I mean, it sounds like there is a procedure. If you say there's a 2-stage and a 5-stage vetting, over here, it's very idiosyncratic. I think each veterinarian has his own approach or her own approach to doing one of these examinations.
Oh, really?
So, there's no standardization like what you're talking about over here.
Well, that can be quite hard for you, though, isn't it? You know, in America, because if you've got nothing to judge it by, so you know, one vet could look at things very differently from a different perspective as another person, surely.
Well, surely, but I do think that happens all the time anyway.
Yeah. That's true. So the two stage and the five stage over here still don't include x-rays. If you'd like an x-ray, then you have to pay extra. But it's the five stage I'd always recommend because it does the heart rate, it does the breathing, the horse is trotted round, canted round, you're looking for lameness. They do the flexion test.
Right.
And I'm kind of thinking from what you're saying, And if I've got this wrong, tell me that I've got it wrong, because I'm trying to understand it and hope that I've got it right in my head. But
sure.
If you're trotting a horse round and it's being ridden and then you lunge it on a hard surface, because that's part of the five-stage veterinary service, you'll then see if the horse is lame, if it's got a problem already underlying. So the vet will be able to say then, this horse is 1/10, 2/10, a little bit lame. Doing the flexion test is going to make it more lame. So as an owner looking to buy the horse, what am I getting out of that? Some other thing, which is the lunging, has already told me that the horse is lame. So the flexion test hasn't helped. If I buy the horse and then say to the vet, we need to investigate to see what's wrong with it, it showed the flexion test as well as the lunging that something's wrong, then that's fair enough. Let's say you're lunging the horse and nothing's being shown and you're doing the flexion test and the flexion test is saying that it's lame. You're basically saying the flexion test isn't showing us anything because it's going to be lame from the flexion test anyway.
In some cases, that's absolutely true in many cases, yes.
So I'd be saying don't bother with the flexion test. If the horse is showing that it's not lame when you're doing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
All the other things with your five-stage vetting, you're trotting them round and it's sound, and you're cantering and it's sound, and you lunge it on the hard ground, and then you trot it up and down on hard ground, and everything's fine. The flexion test, to me, isn't going to show me anything different.
I tend to agree with you. Now, I might add, and I try to encourage, you know, all my purchasers, the other thing that I think is really important is, to the extent possible, ride the horse as much as you can prior to getting it. Mm-hmm. Ride it on different days, at different times of day. Go out before you make a purchase decision. And if you're seeing a consistency that the horse is okay, a flexion test is unlikely to determine that there's some sort of, you know, huge problem lurking beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right on in what you said.
But if we want to investigate problems that we might think are underlying in our own horses right now, for example, then a flexion test could be really useful.
If there is a problem. Hmm. But I don't see any reason to make a problem if there's not one.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
Oh, I know. Horse owners are terrible at that. But, you know, I wrote an article you should look on my website. I wrote an article called the 80-15-5 rule. And that is, and this has been based on a talk that was given at Harvard Medical School. 80% of the time, things are going to be okay. Mm-hmm. 15% of the time, you might have something, you can probably do something about it. And 5% of the time, you're just sunk. there's nothing you can do. But, you know, if 80% of the time things are going to be okay, I don't think we should always be looking for problems, because it just breeds anxiety, and it makes horse owners get all nervous and think they have to buy all sorts of stupid, needless stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, there needs to be a time and a place for just enjoying your horse for what your horse is. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, unrealistic expectations and anxiety are the death of all sorts of otherwise good relationships.
That's very true, very true. But what are your thoughts on, my horse was lame. He was 1/10 lame. And mm-hmm. The advice I was given was a lot of people ride through that lameness. It's only 1/10. And I'll be very open. My view is I don't want to ride through anything. I always want to find out what the problem is, if it can be fixed, because there's a reason that he's lame. You're not just going to have a horse that, it's not like me, if I wake up one day and say, oh, I think I've got a headache, and I don't, I'm just a bit tired. A horse won't suddenly be lame for no reason. So what are your thoughts on this riding through lameness that we keep hearing?
I don't think that there is a right answer to your question. You can only have the right answer through what I like to call a retrospectoscope, where you can look back and see what you should have done. If you have a horse that has a very minor problem, there are many of those horses, just like, you know, you can have some minor stiffness and soreness, and you can work through it and be okay. Mm. And there are many horses like that too. That said, there's really very little wrong with waiting until the horse is okay or investigating what's okay to make sure that that's not a problem. That's more of an individual thing on how you like to get through life than it is what's right or wrong with the horse. Because the only time you know if you made the wrong decision is if you try to ride the horse through it, and then a week later, he's really lame, and you go, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, yeah.
So the safest thing, I suppose, is to, if there's any problem, never do anything until the horse is okay. But, you know, there are horses. The horses have little tweaks and things just like we do. The nice thing about horses is they don't complain.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I just think that ends up being a more matter of personal, how people approach horse ownership, than it is a real medical decision. I mean, we veterinarians would love it if horse owners would call us to examine each and every little tweak and problem. We probably wouldn't have time for dinner, but it would be great for the bank account. But realistically, you know, a lot of things do end up okay.
That's good to hear. It's nice to hear a positive response rather than, we get so much negativity with things we should be aware of. Like over here right now, it seems that we've got an infectious diseases outbreak and we're all worried about strangles. And this is the big thing that's kind of worrying everybody at the moment. What are you finding in America? What kind of things are bothering you?
Well, we certainly have the same level of anxiety among horse owners. I think that's ubiquitous. Let's see, what's new? Well, you know, a lot of it, we have a lot more regional problems in the U.S. than I think you do. So in certain parts of the country, say Lyme disease is a big mystery.
Really?
In the eastern United States, tick-borne diseases are a huge problem. Lyme disease and anaplasmosis are two biggies where horses that, you know, they don't perform well, or people think they're not feeling well, or maybe have some joint swelling. These horses get treated with antibiotics, with tetracycline antibiotics regularly. Here in Southern California, unknown. We don't have it here.
How bizarre.
So that sort of thing. Another example would be, say, Eastern and Western equine encephalitis. A mosquito-borne disease, a big problem on the East Coast of the United States. People vaccinate for it regularly, and there's still, I don't know, somewhere like 20 horses a year identified and have to be euthanized in the United States.
Oh, no.
But they're all on the East Coast. Hmm. In California, we don't have mosquitoes pretty much. So we don't have encephalitis.
Are there diseases where a lot of people are going riding on holidays? You know, they go out and they go to the local riding school and they'll go riding. My fear, I guess, is that if those horses have problems or have diseases, you might be able to bring them back to your horses. Is that, have you ever heard of that happening?
Yeah, but I don't think it's all that common. I mean, it certainly can happen. We just had a big outbreak here in California of equine herpes virus myelitis, and some horses that came back from a show where presumably they were stressed and put into an environment where there were some sick horses. It's a major equestrian facility. And then some of those horses developed neurologic disease. One of them had to be put to sleep, and then they had to quarantine the whole facility for like 3 months. So it happens, but it's not common, you know, because mostly when people have sick horses, they're isolating the sick horses away from the other horses. And it's not like, you know, diseases, most diseases have to pass from horse to horse, or they have to, you have to have a sick horse drinking at a contaminating a water or a group feeder. So when you're talking about taking a horse somewhere, most people aren't going to take their sick horses somewhere. They're going to take their healthy horses. And then when they have their healthy horses there, they're, even if they did have a sick horse, they're not going to paint, you know, snot all over the grounds. So it happens, but I don't think it's nearly the danger that most people think. That said, you know, have your own feed, have your own water, you know, your own bucket, that kind of stuff. I mean, but that's just basic good horse hygiene.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a good reminder to do that, because sometimes
Absolutely.
We can get complacent, and that's when we're in dangerous territory, I think. Like even in our own yards, sharing grooming kits, sharing water bowls, sharing everything, you think sometimes, oh, actually, you've got to be careful, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you don't have to be a germaphobe, but, you know, but basic
Is that,
hygiene,
that's what I am.
Yeah, well,
it's like OCD.
No. Yeah, well, you don't, I mean, I remember when my boys were in school, they went to this school close to the close to my house, and I volunteered in a snack line giving the kids snacks. And so one of the kids comes running back and said, "I dropped my bagel." And one of the mothers goes, oh, wait, and runs and gets a bagel. "Here, we'll give you a new one." And my son comes in a couple days later and says, "Dad, I dropped my bagel." And I said, "Well, pick it up and dust it off and eat it." I mean,
you know. The three-second rule.
Right, and exactly. And some of the mothers were horrified at what a horrible parent I am, you know. But they're still alive, and they didn't get anything from it. So, I mean, there is a level of common sense that that's at play. You can't always prevent everything, but you can do some common sense things to prevent most things.
True. And what did your sons end up doing? Did they become a veterinarian?
No, one of them is a linguist. He's a junior, finishes junior in college, and the other one is in electrical engineering. So they are both apparently quite a bit smarter than I am, and doing very well.
And do you have horses in your family? Do you ride, or do you just look after them, treat them?
I do. The answer is yes to all three questions. I do have a horse. We have a four-year-old warm blood filly.
Oh, wow.
That is doing dressage. And I mean, of course, I will admit my bias to the fact that I think she's the most wonderful horse on the planet. And if you have a horse and you think your horse is the most wonderful horse, I would expect nothing less of you. So this is not a true comparison, but she's a wonderful black filly. She's being trained to go over fences as well as doing dressage. I do ride. I was an endurance rider. So we would do 50 and 100-mile courses when I went to university. And then I rode in the Colorado Mountains in the western United States guiding trails. Wow. And then I don't ride regularly just for the reasons that you were talking about. I'm seeing them all the time. But most recently, a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to go back to Colorado and ride at the ranch where I fell in love with horses. I wrote in Africa a few years ago. That was quite an experience. So yeah, I love writing. I am not a ring writer. I've never worked on the formalities of, you know, the proper seat and all that stuff. But I dare say I can ride a horse.
I bet you can. You can probably ride better than most of us. If you're an endurance rider, I think the stamina that you have to have and the strength and also the bum muscles. I wonder how you get through. I mean, after 2 hours, I am aching and I can't sit down. So how you cope with the hours in the saddle that you do?
It's just you get used to it. It's like anything else, right?
But I've got to ask you, did your filly pass the flexion test?
I bought her as 4-month-old. So I can't even, I've never done a flexion test on her. I got her at 4 months. Yeah. And I've never taken an x-ray of her. She hasn't really done any hard training. So she's unshod, not out of any personal belief. She just doesn't need any shoes. I've given her some vaccinations. I haven't done her teeth yet because she's fine. And I mean, I've checked them and I probably should do them at some point, but she's fine. She's got her vaccinations. She's never been dewormed because she's never, she was dewormed once as a yearling, but she's never had any parasites on fecal exams. And she's bright and shiny and happy and healthy and
beautiful. No,
it's great.
Aww,
yeah.
I'm pleased for you. You're just fascinating, David. Thank you so, so much. If we'd like to go to your website, we can head to www.drraimi.com and you've got loads of articles on there, haven't you? And we said earlier, you've got books on horse health that we can find. Where can we find those? Are they on like Amazon?
Amazon will have them for sure. As a matter of fact, I've got to update them. I just bought out the last copies of 4 of them, and I'm going to post on my Facebook page, which is David Raimi DVM. I'm going to be offering people the opportunity to buy copies of the last 4, which were on navicular disease, respiratory disease, laminitis, and medications and supplements for horses. So if you go to my Facebook page, again, David Raimi DVM, I'd love it if you liked my page. But, take a look for that, too, and we'll have the opportunity to send some books out. I'm going to charge people all of $1 per book.
Are you kidding me? Oh, well, that nah. makes, I was just about to say good luck trying to get those books because I'm going on there now to get them. But now that you're only selling them for $1, I'd feel bad and I'm going to have to let someone else. So maybe we can, share them or something. We can have a horse hour book reading session of your books.
I would love to chat with you anytime. It's just been a delight. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for reaching out to me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Can we follow you on Twitter?
I do have a Twitter, and I think it's Dr. Raimi. Okay. I don't tweet very often. But I post an article on Facebook regularly, at least once a week.
Okay.
So that's a good place to find me. And then the Twitter feeds go out from there. So yes, by all means, you can find me on Twitter. And this social media thing is so much fun. I posted one. I had a client send me a picture of their horse's manure because they were worried about, they thought something might be a parasite. And it turns out it was just a garden variety earthworm. But they sent me this picture and I texted them back and then I posted that picture and I said, I bet I'm the only person who gets pictures of horse poop and is happy for it.
Good. I've done that, to be fair. I have.
Yeah, there you go.
I've taken the photo and then thought, I looked on Google to see if I could find any matching worms to see if it matched.
Right.
But I'd love to have a vet like you where I could just send you a picture and be like, is this okay? To be fair, my vets are amazing. I'm very, very lucky. And they are, they're really hot on their knowledge. They have to be because they have a person like me who's quite paranoid and psychotic. So,
well, you're certainly not alone in the horse world. And, you know, there are there are lots and lots of good dedicated veterinarians out there. I mean, I happen to have a particularly big mouth, I think. So, and I love to write and I love to share my experience. It's been my experience that horses always have problems, and so I don't have to worry about creating them for my clients. And I love sharing my knowledge, and I love horses. And, you know, when horse owning becomes a source of anxiety and becomes too expensive, then people don't want to own horses. And that's bad for horses. Mm. And it's also bad for people, because I think horse people are some of the most fun people I've ever been around.
Well, it's been a pleasure, David. Thank you so, so much. And back to your website, drraimi.com. We can follow you on Facebook and on Twitter, and we're going to share some of your articles as well. So I hope you have a lovely day in California.
Thanks so much, and I hope it dries up where you are.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next week, you can hear performance sports psychologist Charlie Unwin. I've talked about him a few times over the last few weeks because we have been discussing psychology and the different effects that our brains can have on our riding. So Charlie gives us some advice both on the horse and off the horse of how we can focus more on our mind, what we're thinking, and how it will hopefully improve our riding. So you can catch that episode on Acast, iTunes, and our website, horsehour.co.uk. If you enjoyed the episode with Dr. David Raimi on fall inflection tests, then you can check out his article on our website, as well as all the events that have been happening over the weekend. Shane Rose won at Gatcombe. It was the Festival of British Eventing this weekend, and he rode Sam Griffith's Happy Times, and together they were a force to be reckoned with. So massive congratulations, Shane. You can read the article on horsehour.co.uk. Gemma Tattersall won the British Open Championships at Gatcombe this weekend on her gorgeous horse Arctic Soul. This horse is just phenomenal. You would have seen him at the Olympics riding with Gemma, and they're just such a lovely partnership together, and so I'm really, really pleased for Gemma. Congratulations. You can also catch up on the Global Champions Tour, the London leg. Scott Brash and Ben Mayer both secured top spots in the show jumping, which was very exciting. There's so much going on, and all of it is on our website, horsehour.co.uk. Along with lower level riders as well. Riders are currently battling it out for the Hoys wild card. So if you're going to Horse of the Year show, then all the championships are going on right now, which means you could be selected to go to Horse of the Year show, which is very, very exciting. Tickets are on sale already and they sell out pretty quickly. So if you would like to go to Hoys, then check out their website, hoys.co.uk, and get your tickets now so you get good seats. There's also information from the Blue Cross, because they've had some baby foals that have been born that have recently been weaned from their parents, and these gorgeous little coloured foals are looking for new homes. So if you think that you have a lovely home, you can offer them a forever home, then do contact the Blue Cross. All details are on our website and of course on our Twitter at Horse Hour. Keep telling us what you've been up to with your horse. Love to see your journeys and your stories. Just use the hashtag Horse Hour. And as always, you can tag me. I'm at Amy Stevenson 1. I hope you have a great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at Amy Stevenson 1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher, and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.